In Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Alaska recorded 40 new coronavirus infections on Wednesday, the lowest daily case count since September. Hospitalizations have also dropped to their lowest levels since July, with 33 Alaskans being treated with confirmed COVID-19 cases. Also on Wednesday, the Alaska Native Medical Center announced that it wouldn't have any patients being currently treated for COVID-19 for the first time in over 7 months. The daily case count bounced back to a little over 200 on Thursday, but overall case rates remain on a downward trend. At a news conference on Thursday, Alaska's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, said trends are pointed in the right direction.
I'm really excited. it is really great to see these numbers in general decreasing, and we're all cautiously optimistic at the moment, and we have many reasons to be cautious, but we have many reasons to be optimistic.
State health officials say that there could be several reasons for the decline, but one of the main reasons is likely the amount of immunity that Alaskans have, say epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin.
You're looking at upwards of 40%+ of the population that has had some level of antibody response to either natural infection or vaccination.
Still, McLaughlin says we're nowhere near herd immunity, in which enough people have protection from the virus that it dies out. With the new coronavirus variants that spread more easily, estimates suggest that between 70 and 80% of the population would need immunity to reach that point. Winter cold snaps aren't just causing frozen pipes and power outages in the lower 48. In Angoon, recent cold temperatures exacerbated ongoing issues with the town's water supply. As KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, the Coast Guard stepped in to help by delivering bottled water to the community of around 450 people.
The troubles with Angoon's water supply started on the morning of February 3rd, says Mayor Joshua Bowen.
We got a few calls about one of our main lines breaking and pretty heavy river of water coming out of it.
After a day's worth of digging with jackhammers, torches, and an excavator, the town's water operators found the culprit, a small pipe connected to a fire hydrant. They were able to bandage the pipe and stop the leak, but not before the town had lost a lot of water. Then came a stretch of single-digit temperatures.
And lots of people's lines were freezing and breaking, and we were just losing water left and right. So all of that combined was making it very difficult for us to rebuild the water supply.
The town's water pressure had grown so weak that Bowen worried about drinking water safety and reached out to the Department of Environmental Conservation to request a boil water notice, which was granted last Friday. And then
Saturday morning, we woke up and a third of the town had no water at all whatsoever coming out of their taps, mine included.
This time, another residential leak and a broken water pump were to blame.
Overnight, of all times, it decided to die on us, the motor did, and without flow going through there, it was susceptible to freeze, which it did. Froze and broke.
They quickly got to work repairing the pump, but when Bowen got a call from the Tlingit and Haida Indian tribes of Alaska asking if the town needed potable water, he said yes.
Next thing you know, I'm getting a call saying that the Coast Guard is bringing us a bunch of water, and I'm really blown away. That was really fast.
We don't usually get to partake in missions that, you know, are of immediate life safety concerns.
Jeannie Green is the captain of the Coast Guard cutter Hickory, a 225-foot buoy tender homeported in Homer. They were on their way back from dropping buoys in Ketchikan when they got the call that Angoon needed water.
Even though I understand that Angoon, you know, they were going to do okay for a few days, it did feel urgent, and man, we loved getting to do it.
When the ship pulled into the ferry terminal on Saturday evening, Bowen and members of Angoon's tribal government, the Angoon Community Association, helped distribute the nearly 7,000 bottles of water.
I brought the forklift out there, and we were able to just forklift the pallets right into the trucks, and then they went straight from the ferry terminal to door-to-door and delivered a couple of cases of water to every household.
Bowen says the additional water helped relieve pressure on the town's water system so they could get it back up and running. Angoon is working with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and other partners to upgrade its aging water and sewer lines. The boil water notice remains in effect until they receive test results back from DEC, which Bowen anticipates later this week. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has quietly appointed an unknown real estate executive to an agency tasked with regulating commercial fishing permits. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the incoming commissioner will help decide who gets access to the exclusive rights to fish in state waters.
The Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission is obscure to many Alaskans, but for those whose livelihoods are tied to fish, it's a household name. The agency was created in the 1970s after Alaska voters amended the state constitution to allow limits on the number of people allowed to fish, all for the sake of conservation. Fishermen had to show a history of their catch in a particular area to get rights to fish. Attorney and former lobbyist Fate Putman was appointed in 2017 to the commission by Governor Walker.
The commission spent many years going through those applications, sorting through the permits, seeing which fishermen had a history of fishing in the fishery and were economically dependent on the fishery, and making decisions about which people received a transferable permit, a non-transferable permit, and there are unfortunately people who did not receive permits.
That work of documenting who did and didn't get fishing rights took decades, but it's finally done. Over the past few years, the commission has resolved all but one dispute over a shrimp pot fishery in Southeast. And the commission hasn't created a new limited entry fishery since 2004. But Putman says there's still work to be done.
The biggest issue that CFTC is facing now is the optimum number question. So we issue permits to everybody who has a history of fishing in a fishery based on their past participation. But that isn't necessarily the optimum number. That's the maximum number. The optimum number may be lower or higher than that.
Putman's term expires in March, and so his successor, Melvin Smith, will likely take up that question. Until recently, Smith worked for the Anchorage Real Estate Office of a regional native corporation. He's a low-key appointment. Industry representatives say they don't know him. Records show Smith has lived in False Pass, Wasilla, and most recently Anchorage. His most recent commercial fishing permit was active in 2004. He's also held permits for land-based set nets in the Alaska Peninsula, purse seining, and some longlining. His work email at Aleut Corporation bounced back, saying he'd left the Native Corporation earlier this month. Reach for comment, the governor's office only said that Dunleavy appointed Smith because he believes he's the best candidate. Fish politicos like former lobbyist Bob Thorstenson says it's longtime practice for someone close or loyal to the governor's inner circle to be tapped for the commissioner jobs, which come with six-figure salaries.
Whoever gets that job, it's usually a pretty good friend of the governor's.
Thorstenson agrees with Putman that the commission's next task is to right-size the number of permits in limited entry fisheries and create new ones.
There's going to be a lot of buybacks and a lot of different types of moves, and there's moves that need to be made for commercial fisheries. The people that say CFTC's job's done just because we've already established these limited fisheries, those people just don't have a lot of breadth or vision or depth, because CFTC's job is far from done.
CFEC has been under pressure since a scathing 2015 audit that found inefficiencies, and critics argue that the commission has worked itself out of a job. That same year as the audit, lawmakers proposed a bill to merge the commission into the Department of Fish and Game. A compromise reduced the number of commissioners and slightly reduced their salaries. Melvin Smith may be unknown in fishing circles, but industry figures will soon be putting a face to the name. He'll be addressing the United Fishermen of Alaska during this week's annual meeting. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
In other news, Alaska's emergency disaster declaration for COVID-19 lapsed on Sunday, but that hardly means the end of the statewide effort to combat the ongoing pandemic. The mandates issued by the governor's office during the emergency are now considered recommendations, and orders are now alerts. Brian Fisher, incident commander for the State of Alaska Emergency Operations Center, told reporters last week that no one was packing up the shop anytime soon.
What really will change with the expiration of the emergency is, for example, the health orders that we have in place that require a molecular test for SARS-CoV-2 prior to coming to the state. That requirement will turn into a recommendation from us in the interim until that emergency is expired. So we still are encouraging all travelers and, you know, all folks either living here or visiting the state to continue to to participate in all of those things that we've been recommending, you know, for the last year.
That's the advice of health officials as well. Heidi Hedberg is the director of the Division of Public Health. She said testing for travelers was especially important as part of the state's surveillance program for the recently discovered variants of COVID-19, which are believed to be more infectious. She added that non-residents won't be stuck with a big bill if they fail to get a test before their trip. This is KTOO News.